Hello, everyone. This is Greg, your host of Goddamn GameCube. Welcome to Season 3. If you enjoy listening to our show, consider subscribing to us on YouTube for exclusive video content. Thank you and enjoy today's episode. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Goddamn GameCube. Greg and Beppy are your hosts today. We are back with Derek, and we are continuing our Metal Gear Solid retrospective with Metal Gear Solid 3. Before we start, I want to tell fans a little anecdote about my time with Metal Gear Solid 3. So I played Metal Gear Solid 3 for the first time about a month ago. Mm-hmm. I had never played it before, and this is a direct comparison to... So, Beppy played the Silent Hill games for the first time this year, and so we both had, like, a very, like, strange experience, mm-hmm. where I think when you were playing Silent Hill 2, you know, Silent Hill 2 is, I think, is, like, perfect, and you were telling me things about it that you didn't like, or yeah. that you had problems with, and I'm, like, yelling at you in a private chat, what are you talking about? Silent Hill 2 is perfect! And then, you know, I'm playing Metal Gear Solid 3, and there's stuff about it I don't like, and you're like, what are you talking about? You just don't come into this with the right attitude. Well, and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that's true of you and true of me, that my purpose on this podcast is to learn to like things, and I did come out with a mm-hmm. fervent appreciation by the end of that, and I hope you've come away with an appreciation of this game as well,
yeah.
despite its faults, which I agree with you about.
So yeah, I did. So I just want to say to people listening, I played some of these Metal Gears for the first time this year. So my perspective on these is there was no nostalgia here. There was no favoritism. I just played it for what it was. So why don't we get it going? Yep. Beppy, take it away. This is Metal Gear Solid 3.
Yes, Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater. Thank you, Derek, for coming back. Yeah, interesting that we've all experienced this in different points in our lives. I don't think any of us played it when it came out.
Nope.
So this one is set in the 1960s. It's a very kind of fresh take. Notably, Mr. Kojima did not want to come back after 2. He had been trying to leave the series each successive entry. But I guess he just had this like very specific vision for this game. And I think it's a really well... conceived idea for the mm-hmm. most part. Do you guys have anything to say in particular about the setting of this game?
Sure. I just want to say, like, something I took away from playing the Metal Gear Solid games for the first time, but in 2021, that the chronology of the games, even though it spans so many games, actually makes a lot of sense, mm-hmm. which I did not expect.
Yeah.
And this game taking place being the first game in the chronology, mm-hmm. which I found interesting, and it actually made the rest of them make more sense to me. Mm-hmm. So I was very surprised that it was the first one. Derek, do you have anything to say about the setting?
Well, I think the fact that they're sort of starting fresh with a whole new storyline rather than following up the events of MGS2 immediately afterwards is the main reason why MGS3 doesn't suffer from Part 3 syndrome, as mm-hmm. I call it.
Yeah.
Because sure. it's inherently right. totally different.
I think
different.
Like, and I don't remember if other movies had done this at the time, but you see it more now is that the third one is a prequel.
Yeah.
And it's like such, like the Kingsman is doing it now and a couple other series. And it's just like, it's such a good idea because there's so much baggage associated with, you know, MGS2, and we'll get into that later. But in terms of, I think you needed kind of not only like a fresh perspective, a fresh take on the series, but it's also one of the most straightforward stories mm-hmm. and maybe the most successful straightforward. I mean, it's only 1 in 3 really that have like normal stories. And I think this is definitely very successful. So it's set in 1964 and it has kind of, certain aspects of it are kind of like a classic James Bond, aesthetic. Like you have the theme song, everybody knows.
Wait, can we talk about it for a second?
Of course.
So, dude, oh my God. Like when I turned this game on, keep in mind, I knew nothing about it. Like I came in totally dry. Mm-hmm. And when this theme song started, I laughed, and not because I thought it was bad, because I thought it was such a good idea.
Oh yeah,
like it's. I was like, no way,
such a choice.
Are they doing like a Bond thing? You guys ever have those moments where you laugh because they were so clever, and I wish I thought of it first?
Yeah.
I mean, the song is super cheesy, but charming.
I like it a lot.
Yeah. It didn't bother me at all.
It captures a lot of like the weird like tonal things that are funny about this game and how, you know, like the song is very like stupid, but it's super well performed, which I think is another like great thing about it.
Yeah.
And so I think that like that kind of is a nice little intro to so this game is like has a lot of stupid moments in it, but there's still like there's an attention to detail that you're familiar with from the last couple. They haven't lost the humanity of the story at all. And so I thought it was so interesting that it started out this way. Kind of an inventive throwback setting where a lot of the tech is a lot lower than it is in the, you know, there's no arsenal gear or, you know, internet stuff. It's all using the radio instead of the codec. There's a couple moments that are kind of, so everybody knows at this point that, you know, those hovercraft things in the jungle, we know they're real, that they did exist at a certain point, but I still think it, like, I don't necessarily agree with like when they do like future, like actually technically it did exist, like that,
right?
If you're in the game and you're in the 1960s, you're gonna see that like that looks weird.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Yeah, like I mean, certain moments kind of take you out of it in that sense, but overall it kind of commits to that 1960s,
the older setting.
Yeah, pretty cool. So you are now, instead of Solid Snake and Raiden, you are playing as a young big boss codenamed Naked Snake. And I thought that was a really cool idea. I think they were pretty transparent about it in the pre-release, where it you're kind of just seeing this like monolithic figure in his youth, like one of his first earliest missions, doing some espionage in Russia shortly after JFK is killed, the Cuban Missile Crisis, all that stuff, kind of at the height of the Cold War. And the premise is essentially that you are investigating, you're trying to get Sokolov, the very kind of memey Russian scientist who wants to defect. And in the midst of this rescue attempt, you are encountering Snake's mentor, the boss. So this is, try and keep up here. Big Boss's mentor, the boss, is a woman, which I thought was pretty cool. Like very kind of, you know, because you're always told Big Boss is like the best of the best. And then like his mentor is this figure that is not really talked about. I thought like this character this is the fourth time I played this game. This character was a lot more successful for me this time now that I'm a little more mature. Do you guys have anything to say about the boss in terms of her presentation and, you know, voice acting, you know, kind of the concept of the character before we get into spoilers?
I mean, nothing other than that she's a great character. I mean, very, I love the way, how do I describe her? I'd say she's very motherly.
And that's on purpose, I think.
Yeah, which is an interesting dynamic between the main character and his mentor.
Yeah.
Don't they always, I feel I could be incorrect because I have only played the game once. Don't they kind of hint at, like, you're not sure if Snake loves her as like a mother or as like a romantic figure?
Yeah, it's kind of muddled.
It's kind of muddled.
No, I never took away any romance from that.
Okay.
I thought it was purely like he just looks up to her.
Okay.
Sure. Because she taught him everything he knows.
Right.
There's kind of a gray area in terms of some of the dialogue when he's talking to Eva later on.
Mm-hmm.
But I do find it a little distracting that she's voiced by Lori Allen, who also voices Mr. Krabs' daughter Pearl on SpongeBob.
Oh, really?
So if you pay attention, you'll kind of you'll start to notice.
Wow,
It's pretty wild. But
I'm never going to be able to unhear that now.
Yeah,
I know. It's a great performance though. Really spectacular opening when you're jumping out of the plane. I thought that was awesome. Awesome. Did you guys notice in the beginning with the I like MGS1, MGS2, MGS3, you know that?
Mm-hmm.
Did you know what the deal is with that?
I picked I liked MGS2, but I don't remember what it did.
So it's very, I was confused by this because I thought it was going to have to do with your control scheme, but it's actually, it only changes the game in like a very tiny little way. And if you choose MGS1, I think it it makes your stamina deplete slower because it's closer to the original game where you don't need to worry about that. If you pick MGS2, you start off wearing the Raiden mask.
That's right. That's right. I remember that.
Your health bar says Jack instead, which is pretty cool.
But it only happens for like 10 minutes and then you take the mask off.
Yeah, you can take it off now, Snake.
Yeah, that's really, really funny.
I don't remember this at all. I don't remember that being an option.
Like when I picked, I liked Metal Gear Solid 2 as my quote unquote, not difficulty option, but whatever. When you start the game, you look like Raiden. I said, wait, did I accidentally like play DLC? Like, what am I doing? But then you take it off a couple of minutes later.
Yeah. It's in canon. It's like he was wearing a disguise for the crew of the plane or whatever.
Yeah.
But I was talking with you about this. I think the virtuous mission at the beginning is a little, it's maybe like my least favorite part of the game. It's just very like, it does teach you the mechanics very well and how the game works, but there's a lot of exposition right in the beginning with the boss and your CO, who's Major Tom, later Major Zero. And there's just like, it's like you're starting right off the bat with this really long radio call, and it's just like, let me just play the game.
Virtual mission.
But I do like the first kind of encounter you have is with the young Ocelot. I think it was just such an easy thing to botch, and I think I really like him as a young man a lot. Like, it's such a fun, like, Gary Oak kind of, like, rivalry that you have going on, and you're always, like, kind of kicking his ass, and, like, the whole thing is that he's trying to emulate the cowboy thing, and he's trying to do it with, like, a normal, like, handgun automatic. And he's like, and Snake is like, well, you're trying to do something that is more of a revolver technique. And that kind of, like, sets him on that path.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's cool that he influenced him in that way. But you find out that the boss is defecting to the Soviet Union. And this cutscene, like, I forgot how brutal it was.
Yeah.
It's really, like, not only, like, physically, but emotionally, is that, like, you're... Snake is you know, looking up to the boss, and he can't fathom, like, what do you mean you're defecting? And
right.
You kind of you meet all the bosses in this sequence.
Yep.
And it's like one of the trippiest things I've ever seen. Like, with all because I think the first thing you see is like the bees coming down. I'm like, wait, what's going on here?
Yep.
And so the bosses in this game are my personal favorite squad of all of them, just because they're so fucking freaky and they're very like, there's no characterization whatsoever. They're just really weird. So you've got the Pain, who's covered in bees, the Fear, who he has like sort of a camouflage suit, and he
like
sets
climbs
traps,
trees and stuff,
and he can like glide on water.
The End, who is a 100-year-old sniper. The Fury, who
is a disgruntled astronaut.
Yes,
that's his whole persona.
He has
a flamethrower.
Yeah, has flamethrower and a jetpack. The boss, you know, who we mentioned. The Joy, as she is known, because they're all different emotions. And Colonel Volgan is introduced here, too, who is sort of the main villain.
He's like the electric guy.
And they never explain how he can control electricity. But he's just there, and he's like this jacked Russian guy. And it's so funny to me, because I was talking also, I mentioned our friend Drew, and I was talking about how this game is so ideologically driven, but he's the only like character who doesn't have one.
Right.
He just shows up like can you discern like what is his motivation?
He's a bad guy who wants to do bad things. And he can harness the power of force lightning.
They describe him as a sadist frequently. He's like always like grabbing people sexually and just like real piece of shit.
Do you know what I found funny about Metal Gear Solid 3? In all the this is what I kind of find funny about like the whole game in terms of the cinematics versus the gameplay. Like in the cinematics, you always get your ass kicked. Have you noticed that?
Oh yeah.
Like boss always disarms you and whoops your ass, or you get you know, tortured and beat up later.
Yeah.
Have you guys noticed that? Where Metal Gear Solid's kind of one of those games where like in gameplay you're the shit, but in cutscenes, everyone whoops your ass. Like, I found that very funny.
Well, like, it's also like, to me, this game has kind of this undercurrent of like the toll it would take on a person to get, because you have, there's a couple new mechanics in this one.
Mm-hmm.
So you have, you have to treat your injuries, notably. Shortly after this happens, you have to, you know, he gets his arm broken by the boss, she betrays him, and gets thrown in the river. And I think you have to, like, use a splint and bandages and stuff
like
that.
Various items.
And it's kind of like that's the... It kind of, you know, it's adding like a layer of realism to the survival aspect, but it's a lot of it has to do with the toll that it's taking on Naked Snake and how he became the man he is.
Right.
So this happens. Colonel Volgan shoots a nuclear weapon and, you know, you get the fantastic theme song. And so then you kind of get like that's sort of like the tanker, I guess.
It's like the tutorial.
Yeah. And then you get into Operation Snake Eater itself. And so essentially, I think the premise is that Lyndon Johnson and Khrushchev are doing a deal because it's like, well, you know, the boss is an American who defected to Russia. And she stole those nuclear weapons and everything, but we need to, you know, you need to prove your innocence here that, you know, the U.S. wasn't involved in this nuclear attack. So they send, Snake to go kill his former mentor. And I think it's like a pretty, for a series that is like known for its kind of twists and turns, it's kind of welcome to just have a very clear objective.
Yeah, it's very straightforward.
And you kind of like, here's the people that are going to be in your way and like, just go for it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of cool, I thought too, that, you know, in the beginning you're kind of less prepared, and then when you go back to kind of those same areas at the beginning of like the Snake Eater mission, then you know you have a little bit more gear, you kind of know what you're doing a little bit more. So I maybe a good time to talk about your contacts. So we talked a little bit about the ones in the previous games. Some of them fulfill similar roles. Major Zero, kind of this English guy. I learned like there's a cool like because you don't see their faces animated in this one. It's all just like sort of slides.
Yeah.
You can scroll through. Major Zero lives in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Not that far.
Not that far from us.
Paramedic lives in Boston herself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. So we got some local people. I think Sigint is Chicago, though. So he's a little farther. But this is kind of adding on to the Coda commentary that I had in the previous games, is that I wasn't like going out of my way to talk to them really. Like Sigint will explain how all your different equipment works, but you can kind of piece it together yourself, mm-hmm. you know, and Paramedic would be interesting to talk to in general, except that she, like when you save your game, she always talks to you about movies.
Dude, I skipped all of
right.
them.
Right. I forgot about that. All of them.
Like I think I said this like in a chat, I think with us, where I said the codec in the radio is really cool in game that you have to dial frequencies and talk to people, but it's incredibly tedious.
Very disruptive.
It's incredibly disruptive, even though it's cool.
Yeah. And it depends on like, it depends on how interesting the characters are too.
Yeah.
Because I like talking to Major Zero. He's a really interesting guy. Has a lot of strange reasons for what he does. And Eva, who you meet in this sequence, you can also talk to her. And I thought it was kind of an interesting presence because you haven't really had that yet in a Metal Gear game, where it's kind of like a ubiquitous like femme fatale almost.
Sure.
You don't really know what her motivation is coming from. Shortly after this, you get into the Ocelot boss fight. These kinds of kind of like the talking points of these games are often the boss fights, as far mm-hmm. as I'm concerned. They're kind of like the set pieces. So the Ocelot boss fight is like pretty straightforward in terms of the later ones. I mean, I guess it's a good way to kind of get into.
Yeah, I think like the problem that I kind of had with this boss fight and a lot of the game that I'll get into at some point,
yeah,
is just the shooting in this game is incredibly wonky.
Yeah,
like it's very, very derpy.
Yeah.
And when you have to get into a gunfight at all, you're either praying like auto aim works or you're trying to hit eight different buttons to go into first person mode and just try your best.
I think like that. I mean, I completely agree with you in terms of like the gameplay being super dated, like the way that you kind of have to claw your hands into a certain contortions to just like make a gun work.
And it's unbelievable.
Like, it's and I feel like I don't know why, but I prefer playing two gameplay wise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Derek, do you feel that way? Do you prefer two over three?
I think so. So I was thinking about this earlier, how because the only version of it that I played was the what do they call it, the subsistence edition.
Yes.
Where so the HD re-release where they changed the camera work. So
yeah, the camera's movable. It's more quote-unquote modern.
It's right behind you, which blows my mind to think that the original release of this game was just a top-down view
yes.
with no Soliton radar. And the only The only control you had over the camera angle, you couldn't like turn it really.
You could like shift it.
Yeah, you're right. You would if you moved the right thumbstick, you could shift it a little bit.
You can still access that type of camera view if you click the thumbstick, which I did accidentally. I'm like, why is it like this? I hate it.
Yeah, it's just it blows my mind to think that like that's the only option that players had when the game was originally released.
Yeah, I don't think I would have liked it nearly as much if I had stuck with that.
Right. Do you guys think maybe there was a problem with, well, they changed the camera, but the gameplay didn't change. That's why the shooting is so wonky.
Maybe.
You know what I mean? We're like, well, yeah, you fixed the camera, but nothing else was fixed with it.
Okay. Well, I'm pretty sure you could still access first person mode.
Yeah, you're right.
With the original...
But it's like you have to hit so many buttons to actually go into first person mode. What is it? Like you have to take out weapon, go into first person, hold down button. It's unbelievable. Right.
Well, I did, you know, maybe a good point to bring up the UI here where you... In addition to the injuries I mentioned earlier, you also have to change your camo on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of tedious and it's kind of ridiculous to think that like he has like a certain set for every possible, because you're monitoring it in the corner. There's a percentage of how well you're blending into the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are kind of like derpy, like there's like different flags for different countries or, you know, the Santa Claus suit, as we mentioned. And just kind of like weird stuff. Honestly, like I think the menus are like really kind of the Achilles heel of this game.
Well, it kind of almost has an RPG-y feel where there are so many items, there are so many weapons, there are so many camos. You have to pause to change them. You're changing a lot of gear all over. It's like very tedious, even though I don't mind that it's kind of derpy that you're going into all these healing menus and having to do stuff.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things in this game.
For sure.
There's a
lot. Sure. You also have to, you have a stamina meter in this game that steadily depletes, and depending on, it's a little different, like the way the health works, depending on where your stamina meter is, your health will recover slower.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you replenish it is by eating animals that are in the, so you have, you know, you have your trank gun, your just normal gun. You can capture them in mouse traps, cages, that kind of thing. And it's kind of interesting that it makes the world feel a little bit more lived in, because I feel like, you know, you had like the wolves in the first game, you had the seagulls in the second one, but like there's a ton of different stuff, and they all like, he will tell you like how good it tastes after he eats it.
What's interesting too is if you eat something over and over again, you'll like it more.
Yeah.
So I think there's like a certain fruit that you don't like, but if you eat it over and over and over, you'll actually gain a taste for it.
Yeah. And I don't think that is ever the case for the Russian rations though.
Yeah.
He hates them like beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
And also if you leave it too long, it'll spoil,
which is interesting.
You know, it'll have a negative effect,
and you have to take stomach medication.
Yeah,
there are a lot of things.
A lot of you know, you have pills, anti venom, all that's because you can get bit by the snakes.
Yep.
As well. In addition to eating them, and so it's kind of, there's a lot of like survival kind of elements, micromanaging all these different systems, and it's interesting too, because they talk about when Volgan fires that nuke in the beginning, that the ecological impact will be devastating, and it's kind of like you're kind of being reinforced that, you know, this is the natural world and it will be affected by the actions of, you know, the stakes are pretty high as it is, because it's like if we don't correct this, there will be all out nuclear war.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's kind of interesting just seeing like the discrepancy between the animals just doing their thing and humans with these fucking absurd plots.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
And it is kind of funny that you can just knife snakes and rats and eat them.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's very like gamey.
Yeah. It's very, there's a lot of gameplay systems and it's very gamey.
So if you beat Ocelot, you're kind of almost immediately thrown into the pain boss fight.
Yes.
So
he's talking the cave.
Oh boy.
Yes. So that kind of an interesting thing that you two asked me about the when you go into the caves for the first time, you were talking about how when you go down there, it's super dark and hard to see. And my mind, I think in this playthrough I went to, he has a cigar that you can light and you can get around. But you were like,
I played this for the first time this year.
Yeah.
And when you get thrown into the cave, it is so dark, at least to the point where I could not see anything and I could barely play it. And I said, this is either like not a great port or it's on purpose.
Right.
And what I thought was really cool, and I hope it's on purpose, was the longer you're in the cave, your eyes adjust to the darkness and you can see better. Yes.
Yeah, that's on purpose.
That's really, really neat. Like, eventually you find a torch.
Yeah.
But I was like, what's going on? Did I not do this right? Why can't you see anything?
Yeah,
but
because you don't have any night vision goggles or anything
yes,
like that.
Yes, it's pretty cool.
Pretty rad. And you have to fight this guy who's doing all these like karate moves. And, he can control bees. And that's his own. That's his only motivation. And did you guys like this fight?
I did. Okay. I actually thought it was one of the better gameplay moments in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Where... So, not at this moment, but a little later into the episode, maybe I'll talk about some flaws with the gameplay. But what I liked about this fight is you have what you have. You're swimming around. There are only a few places where you can get up and shoot at him.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to avoid his bees by swimming. What I liked about it is it's sort of you're in this situation. You have the gear you have and you have to survive this. And it's really strange. It's very you feel very vulnerable because you have to swim around.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
Derek, what did you think?
I mean, so the cobras, I think, are absolutely absurd.
Yes.
In concept. But the fights themselves are cool. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
It's pretty impossible for me to take a character like the Pain seriously.
No.
Right.
And I think he's a complete moron for ambushing you where he does. Where you can avoid his bees by swimming, but it is a cool fight.
Yeah,
you know?
I really liked it because it made I really had to try hard to do it.
Yeah,
where I feel like there are too many moments in this game where I derped my way through it.
Okay,
and with this boss, I was just like, we're vulnerable, we're in the water. There are only a few moments where you can get up and shoot him. Let's focus and do it.
Right,
which I thought some fans don't like it.
It reminded me a lot of it's a weird comparison, but in Majora's Mask, the Great Bay Temple boss, the big fish.
Yeah, where you're swimming around.
Arena, it's just the opposite way where you're the one swimming around.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. And it's something interesting about these bosses that they all explode when you kill them.
Yeah. Oh,
and they say their own names. And I think it's like to destroy whatever evidence is so that it can't be captured for research. Is that the point?
I think so.
I have no idea.
I think so.
The thought that they all have like a self-destruct mechanism built into them is hilarious.
It makes them even funnier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that is pretty cool. He can shoot bees into you that you have to take out with a knife.
Oh my God.
Yes.
There is like bee stings that you have to treat. If you throw a grenade at them, the bees will carry it back to you and try to blow you up. A lot of pretty cool stuff. And something I never used before because I didn't know what it was is bug juice.
That's what it's used for.
It's really bug spray, and it's just like it keeps them off you.
Yeah,
kind of cool. So that's that part. There's kind of a part that I don't love where you have to sneak into the lab wearing the scientist uniform.
Yeah.
It's just kind of clunky and I just want to get back to the jungle.
Yeah.
But it's where you meet that guy, Granin, and he's kind of explaining that what Sokolov is working on is called the Shagohod, and it's kind of like a proto Metal Gear.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it because it's very kind of, it's clearly... It can launch a nuclear missile, but it has treads. It has to get up to speed on like a runway. And I like that it's kind of like you're contending. It's still like a really intimidating thing, but you know, so that's like kind of you're being set up. You're going to have a Metal Gear fight in this game at a certain point. So, mm-hmm. You know, don't worry.
I kind of like that character too, because he's just kind of getting trashed in the office.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very kind of, He's like, I don't really give a fuck. I'll tell you whatever.
Do you know what's really funny? If you're in like a caution state or in an alert state, you can't get in the door. You knock on the door and he says, you know, leave me alone. Leave me to my drinks.
Oh, that's
funny. It's really funny.
That's great. Yeah. Cool character.
I think he's the only one who actually speaks in a Russian accent.
I think you're right.
Because, okay, so... All right, so the first time you meet Sokolov, mm-hmm. there's this really strange line, a little out of left field, where he says,
"Grow operatives."
Well, no, there is that. That made me laugh really hard the first time I played this game.
Yeah,
but it's when he says, "By the way, your Russian is superb," which he says to you in a British accent, and that's they're doing sort of like a meta thing where they're
speaking
telling,
in Russian, but
right, but yeah. For the player's sake, it's being played back to us in English.
My impression was that when they're speaking with like an American accent, they're actually speaking Russian, and when they're speaking in a Russian accent, they're actually speaking
English. So you think in that, because I thought the same thing. So you think in that scene with Granin, they're actually speaking English?
That was my thought, because he's talking about like Emmerich, his friend in America,
right?
You know, Otacon's father. Yeah, we learn, but
mm-hmm. but that initial moment with Sokolov really took me out of it. It's just sort of like, because I don't think I nor like any player on their first go was sitting there like, man, why are they speaking English? They're in Russia. This makes no sense. Like, I didn't question it.
It's so almost the fact Austin Powers moment.
Like the fact that Kojima felt the need to like clear that up for us. It's like, well, okay, I wasn't really even thinking about it, but because you've mentioned it, I now notice it.
About it.
But it's sort of like if you're gonna break the fourth wall in any way, like this is Metal Gear Solid, like which delights in breaking the fourth wall, as we know. They might as well have gone all the way with it and have Snake say, "It's strange though. It sounds like we're speaking English," and then have Sokolov say, "Yes, but." It's for the player's sake.
They might as well have just gone all the way.
Exactly.
You know what's so funny though?
There's one more thing, because it's like, it doesn't, again, like them being in Russia and speaking English, again, it doesn't have to make sense. I don't care. Because the fact that you're in Russia, but the entire setting is like a lush like jungle.
I was going to bring that up.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know
in Russia
for sure if that, I don't know much about the geography of Russia, but I haven't seen a Russian jungle in any other media ever.
If it does exist, it would have to be as far south in that country as possible.
Knowing Kojima, I wouldn't be surprised if he knew some obscure fact.
Or, I mean, they saying it takes place somewhere in like southeastern Siberia or something like that, where it's very, I don't know, unsettled? I have no idea.
Possibly.
You know, I didn't even think about any of those aspects you guys just talked about until right now. Mm-hmm. We're like, you know, oh, wait, they're in Russia, but he brings up, oh, your Russian is superb, but why is he doing that? Wait, there are no jungles in Russia either.
Yeah.
Whatever. Just continue.
Okay. So on your way there, there's a lot of traps that you have to avoid and cut yourself down from ropes and stuff. And soon after, you realize this is the work of the next boss, the Fear.
Yes.
Oh, and, my God.
This is possibly like the funniest moment in the game to me. He's just such a bizarre like character, even weirder than the Pain, I think. He's crawling up trees and he has like dislocating his arms and setting traps for you. But there's a lot of cool ways you can beat him. This is another game where I went non-lethal for the most part. So you're kind of your methods of doing that are either to knock them around a little bit. There's the CQC, which we haven't really talked about. There's kind of grappling and holds and that sort of thing in this game. And there's also you have your Trank gun, as you did in the previous game. So I did that with him, but he is. He's wearing a specific type of camouflage that you can pick up later, and it gives you near perfect camouflage, but it drains your stamina super fast. Mm-hmm. So he's always eating.
Yep.
And so he'll eat like all like the animals on the, you know, on the jungle floor and stuff.
He'll eat
and
fruit
everything.
In the trees.
And so you can, you know, expedite that process and manipulate it by like lowering his stamina and then attacking him when he's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
But you can also, like throw spoiled food on the ground
and he'll eat it and it'll hurt him
you know, poison frogs, you know, their skin is poisonous or whatever. And you can also trick him by using the fake death pill.
Yeah. Yep.
And I wound up in a previous playthrough, I tricked him and then stealthily lit him on fire with the torch.
That was my playthrough. You were there and taught me how to do that. I actually never fought the Fear and the way you were supposed to. Like, I skipped over that whole boss fight by doing that. You take the fake death pill. He runs over to your unconscious body, doing like he's looking around like confused.
Yeah.
And then you light a torch under his crotch, and he slowly burns to death because for some reason, like. He doesn't walk away when he feels a burning sensation that is literally killing him.
Is it
slowly.
An exploit? It must be.
Oh my God! I don't, of course, but it's just like the fact that I didn't relate to any of the things you said until the end where you mentioned the fake death pill. I did not fight him, by any traditional means.
I fought him straight up. Like
it's tough.
This is interesting too, where I didn't do any of those like cool methods at all. I actually just chugged to one end of the map where I knew there were only a couple of places he could go, and I danced around trees and stuff to actually fight him straight on.
Oh, really?
So I didn't do any of the eating methods.
He's also shooting crossbow bolts at you.
And what's really stressful about this is you have to take them out.
Yeah.
Like, you have to go into the curing menu and take them out of you.
And so if you don't, you can leave them in and you will gradually heal, but the wounds will close and the crossbow bolts will be on your body for the rest of
the
playthrough.
There was one in my hip the whole game.
Really?
Yes. I think when I was like, he had a smidgen of health left, I said, fuck it. Let's just, you know, ball out and kill him.
Sure.
I didn't take it out and I killed him and it was in me the whole game.
get them like all like in your forehead and your crotch.
Wow. I don't remember it working like that.
Yeah, it's pretty
cool. So if you take too long to act on an injury, it follows you forever.
That crossbow bolt will stay in you.
Yeah.
Wow. Pretty cool.
They treat it pretty seriously. Like if you injure Ocelot in the virtuous mission, he'll be wearing like bandages wherever you hurt him the rest of the game.
Virtual mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And right after is the end, who is the sniper. I think this boss is like incredible. Greg disagrees.
It's so cool.
I just think it's like it's so unprecedented, and like, you know, it takes place over three different, you know, kind of areas, and it's a very slow kind of. This is another one that you can go about a couple different ways. But Greg, let's talk about your experience.
Let's talk about my unfortunate experience. Because I think what happened with this is that this boss can be incredibly cool. And after I have my little speech here, you're going to tell everyone about it.
Yeah.
But they set you up for this like Snake. This is going to be a very long and slow sniper battle. And I said, okay, I'm going to crawl around the entire map. I'm going to get behind him and I'm going to light him up. So that's what I did.
Right.
I crawled around the entire map. I said, this is pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I got behind him, pulled the trigger, but it doesn't kill him in one hit. And I said, wait a minute. He just kind of runs off. I can just chase him. So I didn't like sit back down. I didn't crawl anymore. I said, I'm literally going to run after him and unload guns and kill him.
Mm-hmm.
So what I didn't love about this is you can essentially run at him and roll and he's going to miss. And so you do not have to stealth this at all.
Okay.
You can just break it really easily, which was very disappointing because I realized after I beat it that you can do a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Now, why don't you explain some of it?
It's
just unfortunate that just like I didn't do it. I just didn't understand.
I guess it's like, what can he do?
It's really cool. Yeah. We're like, I didn't know this. If you save and quit during the boss battle and you wait a bunch of days, like a more than a week,
I think
you come back to the game, he's just dead.
Yeah, he will have died of old age.
Yep. It's really cool.
But you can also do that by manipulating the PS2's internal clock.
Yes.
Yeah, and if you do it for less than that, I think he will find you. Or
he captures you. He puts you in jail.
Puts you in jail.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple. You can actually see him earlier during gameplay and shoot him then.
Yes,
and which I've never seen before in a game where you can just kill him while he's being rolled around in a wheelchair and he'll explode. And it's pretty.
And there
wild.
Is no boss battle, which is really
right.
cool.
Right.
If you get the sniper rifle early enough and shoot at him during the cutscene where he arrives. There will be no boss fight,
yeah.
which is really cool.
And something interesting that I did this time that I didn't know was a thing was that I was using the directional microphone, and I found he has a parrot, a pet parrot.
Yes.
And I tranquilized it, and I captured it, and I'm like, what happens with this? Like, because I figured like if you eat it, he'll be angry, and he is.
Yeah.
But I didn't do that. So what you can do is... You can unleash his parrot at him and he'll be distracted by it.
Wow.
And he'll like be swatting at it and you could take a couple shots at him.
This might be a good time for me to describe my problems with the gameplay before
we
move on to the second half of the game. Because here's what happened to me when I was playing this game. And this happened to me a lot where I kept running into balancing problems in this game where there are so many cool things you can do, whether like there's a bunch of different ways you can fight the end or there are all these healing systems and all these camos. But the problem I have with this game is that every area is so short and you get a checkpoint every time you go to a new area. So it is just as easy to just sprint right through the area and run into the checkpoint because it doesn't matter if you die. You get the progress. So what I kept doing was like once I failed stealth, I would just sprint to the end of an area and I would never heal myself. I would just jump off a cliff on purpose because I wouldn't have to use any of my gear. And I think like my issue with the gameplay really came down to there's so many cool things to do. But why? Because I can just run at the end and roll and finish it. I kept running into this stuff where I could break the game too easily. And I think, you know, for all the fans who are going to be like, dude, what the fuck? How did you not like this game? When it comes to the gameplay, I just thought I broke it too easily and too early. And that happened to me frequently.
I just first, you know, I think because I bought into the world, I just never considered doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like, that's just like the kind of, I don't know, that's the kind of game it is where it, like, you can really just, it's same thing with, like, later on with Five, you can kind of just go about these things. Like, if you found that fulfilling, if you enjoyed running through and jumping off cliffs and gaming the game, then go right ahead. For me, I preferred, you know, getting as close to perfect stealth as possible in every situation.
And I want to make sure people know, like, you know, I'm not like necessarily dumping on the game or saying it's bad or anything like that. When did it come out?
2004.
I just think, like, I found too many ways to exploit it too early.
Okay.
And there is one problem I have with the game where you cannot quick load the game. So let's say I get caught during stealth. You would either have to turn off the game, go back to the main menu and load it again, or just die to try to stealth it again, which I just didn't love that.
Yeah.
I just wish it encouraged me to play better.
And later on, they do implement that in Five, where if you get caught, you can load your checkpoint.
I think before we continue, I think my big takeaway is I wish I was encouraged to play smarter rather than it not mattering.
Like another Konami title we discussed recently, very ripe for a remake.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, continue, because this game is very cool, even though my gameplay experience was unfortunate.
Yeah.
So let's keep going.
No, I did want to mention, you know, while we're in the downers, the Fury is probably my least favorite boss in the game.
Is that one next?
yeah
okay. Me too.
It's kind of like a more tedious version of like the Vulcan Raven fight where you're being chased around.
Yeah.
And I just hate like that he just kind of like uses his flamethrower to flame entire areas, and it makes it really tedious to get around. You have to keep treating your burns. And I don't know, I just did not find this boss very
I did not find this fun either.
The way he introduces himself, dude. Like, you walk into that room and then immediately he shows up and just says, "I am the Fury." No preamble whatsoever. And then he just proceeds to tell you his whole life story.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what must have been going through Snake's head at that time.
There's a lot of moments like that in this series where they'll just wax poetic about it.
For minutes.
Like we mentioned, like Solidus waiting at the top of Federal Hall to have your conversation.
And you're sitting there just wondering why Snake just doesn't shoot him while he's monologuing. Or why the Fury doesn't just unload his flamethrower right then and there. Like he has to tell him, "I came back from space and saw the Earth aflame. And you know what I saw? Fury."
All right.
And it's so funny because there's like a very poignant monologue about space later, and I don't get, like, so he saw fire as you're heating up, as you re-enter the Earth's atmosphere, you know, you see flames, and it's like, so that's just like for a second, know what I mean? Like, or not for a second, but it defined this guy's entire life.
I do want to comment on this boss battle.
He's just really, really mad.
I do want to comment on this boss battle a little bit. Because sort of bringing our listeners into sort of my experience playing it in 2021, you know, I just kind of talked for a few minutes about gameplay balancing issues and that sort of thing. What I really like in any video game is when the game is smarter than me and like I can't exploit it. There are a couple of moments in this game where they do a good job with that. This boss battle is actually one of them where if you did a better job fighting the end, you get the Mosin Nagant and then you can actually non-lethal this boss from a distance, and it's much easier. And also the pain does that too. Like you have to swim around.
Right.
That's kind of the general point I was making. When this game is smarter than me, I liked it a little better.
Yeah.
Even though I don't find the Fury fun, I did enjoy how I couldn't derp my way out of it.
Yeah.
I had to play tough.
That's true for sure.
Yeah.
So I pretty much that's the end of the Cobras with him. You get into Groznygrad, the big fortress here. Pretty awesome. I don't really like this segment, even though it's a nice change of pace where you have to abduct Colonel Rykov or Major Rykov.
Ivan Rydenovich Rykov.
It's just like a big joke on how like pathetic Raiden was.
Yeah.
But it's like, it feels a little too referential where it's
I
like
agree.
We talked about We talked about how Raiden is actually pretty cool, and I guess maybe at the time it was just sort of cathartic for fans to like shit on him. Mm-hmm. And it's like, sure. I feel bad that Kojima is kind of like shitting on Raiden in that moment.
I don't understand the big joke.
Because you talk to Zero like after putting the disguise on,
yeah,
and he says things like, ugh, I'm getting annoyed already just looking at it.
Yeah.
Like, he's not like a Jar Jar Binks.
I'm
like,
kind of tired of the Raiden jokes, honestly. Metal Gear 2 is the best one, so like, yeah, stop doing that.
Completely.
Yeah,
it's a nice change of pace for sure. But if you don't know what you're doing, that sequence can take you a while to like learn how to abduct him and shove him in the locker and stuff. So this is another really interesting Kojima moment where you're sneaking in dressed as Rykov, and Volgan will grab your dick in a very similar way that the president did to Ryan.
Why do they do this
game.
In these games?
I mean, so clearly. Colonel Volgan is Rykov's lover, and he's like, you're not the colonel, I know that crotch, or something like something ridiculous. And this is where Snake gets captured. Mm-hmm. And this sequence was again like the opening, a lot more brutal than I remember. Like, he's getting the fucking piss kicked out of him. It's insane. And it you know, as famously ends with Snake losing one of his eyes.
Yeah, you get the iconic Snake look.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Which is pretty awesome. You're kind of like the characters sort of convening here for the first time. You know, the boss is not really helping him out. Mm-hmm. Eva is there also as a double agent, just kind of sitting in on it. Ocelot's there. And so I actually just showed Greg this. When you're in prison, a couple different things can happen. So you can get out a couple different ways, similar to MGS1, one of which I think is the guard will throw you some food, and if you throw it back to him, you'll develop a friendship with him, and he'll like let you out eventually, which is kind of interesting. The second one is that you can spin Snake around in the cure viewer, where you treat his injuries, several times, and he will literally throw up because he's dizzy, and the guard will come in.
That's what I did
to investigate.
But that option was clearly more of an Easter egg, because if you go with the first option of developing like a rapport with the guard, you get the cutscene where he says he's like Johnny Senior, you know?
Yeah,
and he talks about his son Johnny Junior. I don't know if he mentions that like he has like an issue where he shits himself all the time, or there's a reference to that, but
something,
you know. Well, did you guys go with I went with like option three, which is
I did too.
The sorrow tells you to call a frequency and it opens the door.
You will see that. So we didn't even talk about the sorrow, who is a former member of the Cobras who was killed
by the boss
For political reasons or some reason. He's like a medium who could communicate with the dead. And he's now sort of a ghost who is just kind of... We didn't actually mention that during cutscenes now, you can hold down, I think, L1, and you will see things through Snake's perspective.
Yep.
And you can kind of catch a glimpse of him at various points.
And I believe it's during the torture scene or something.
He'll be holding up the frequency.
The Sorrow's like almost holding up a sign that says a frequency number.
Yeah.
But what's cool about this game is you have to remember the number.
Yeah.
And so if you remember that number, it will open the door.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, even though he's very kind of like a gamey, like it reminds me almost of Mario with the guy with the fishing pole.
Yeah, sure. The camera guy?
I love
that guy.
Yeah, it's cool though. But what I was showing you earlier was that in the original version of this game, there's this really bizarre sequence where if you save once you're in prison and then quit out, come back in, there will be a nightmare sequence because Paramedic was telling Snake about Dracula's.
Mm-hmm.
And there's like, I don't even know how to describe it. I showed you.
Yes, there is a weird dream sequence where it's kind of like an action-y sword and board kind of thing.
It's like a mini game. It kind of has like a Devil May Cry kind of feel.
Kingdom Hearts almost sort of feel.
It's really disturbing. It feels like maybe it was like a demo for a game that didn't get produced or something, and they just stuck it in there.
Strange.
But it plays really well.
I would say to our audience, because this is an audio medium, is go search like Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake's Nightmare. It's really bizarre.
did they take this out of the
re-release? Yes.
Why?
I don't know. Do you think maybe they did not have the rights to the prototype anymore when the release? Maybe not. If it was a prototype,
it's like lizard men wearing like police jackets and they have like hook weapons. Something about it is really it's grainy, very grainy footage. I just thought it was worth mentioning because it's like one of the strangest things about this game.
Yeah, sure.
A couple cool things happen also during that scene where the boss will give you back your like fake death pill, mm-hmm. and Ocelot will put a tracker in you. And I thought this was really cool because it barely registered with me the first couple times because I'm always messing with the menus and mm-hmm. Cure or whatever. But if you he puts a transmitter in you, knowing that you will escape presumably. And if you leave it in, there will be enemies in the next area.
That's cool.
Like ready for you.
Yeah, but if you take it out, it makes it easier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you kind of have the fugitive scene where he jumps out of the sewer. Mm-hmm. You guys seen that movie? You know what I'm talking about? Tommy Lee Jones?
No, I haven't.
It's like a direct parallel.
Hey, if you're familiar with the movie, put it in the comments. But go ahead.
If you love The Fugitive, come on.
Yeah.
I did want to... this is actually really cool. The Sorrow sequence,
the Sorrow boss fight, quote unquote, is really cool.
Yeah. So you fall into the water and you wake up in a very kind of dreamlike area, kind of
almost like a River Styx sort of thing.
Yeah. What I was reading about was that it's influenced by the Buddhist afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
The River of Three Crossings.
Yeah.
If you know what that is,
that's
what this is. And you're walking up the river, it's very cinematic, and the Sorrow will be floating in front of you, and he has a health bar that's empty,
mm-hmm.
and you will be confronted with everyone that you have physically killed in the game up until this point.
So the bodies of enemies and the bodies of bosses, if you chose to kill them, are floating down the river at you.
Yeah. So
really cool.
If you didn't, if you went non-lethal, then there will only be the bosses because they explode either way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, it's a pretty, pretty eerie sequence. And so I did kind of agree with you. I mean, because there was... You knew that there was going to be some kind of clever way out of this.
You asking me to talk about my experience?
Yeah,
with this?
Yeah. Your experience and your recommended solution.
Yeah. So I thought this boss fight was really cool. I shouldn't say I went into this game not knowing anything about it. I knew this was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
But the way you solved this boss fight, I thought my solution was more clever, but it wasn't right. When you get to the end of the river, Sorrow is just floating there,
mm-hmm.
and he says to you, go back to your life, like go back to real life. I said, okay, I'm going to save and quit.
Right.
Because maybe he means turn off the game, but that's not right.
Right.
But what you actually have to do is when you get to the end of the boss fight and you touch the corpse at the end, you die.
You gotta take the pill that the boss gave you.
Right. And you have to take the, here's the thing. You have to take the revival pill after dying,
mm-hmm.
but you can, this is what I didn't love about it. You cannot eat the fake death pill and then revive yourself. You have to die by reaching the end of the boss fight and then only using the revival pill.
Right.
But here's the thing. You have to use the revival pill in the game over screen.
But if
you never use the revival pill the rest of the game, you have no idea how to do that.
Sure.
It's almost one of those like Psycho Mantis problems, or unless you call the codec and they tell you what to do, like how would you know what to do?
I think it was foreshadowed slightly better in this game.
Sure.
I mean, it took me a few tries.
Me too.
But I mean, and then I think the third time I got to the end of the river and was dead, I was like, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. I have a revival pill.
Yep.
So, I mean, there was a little bit more to work with, mm-hmm. than there was in MGS1 with Psycho Mantis.
Sure.
So I'll give it that. What I will say is the Sorrow, I think, among the Cobras is the only one I'm able to take seriously.
Yeah.
I think the end is cool, too.
I think it's cool.
The two of them are the only members of the Cobra unit I find genuinely cool,
like
characters.
Compelling characters.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
The pain, the fear... The Fury, I just cannot bring
it's
myself
just too
to take
bizarre.
Seriously.
Big memes.
Yeah, the fear.
Yeah,
the fear. He's like not scary at all.
No, he's just James McAvoy from like that M. Night Shyamalan movie. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Jesus Christ.
Yeah. No, I mean sincerely, great moment. Very creative.
Very
thing
creative.
That I haven't seen in a game before. I wanted to briefly mention you kind of rendezvous with Eva here, who gives you mm-hmm. your shit back. What a cool thing is that whenever you go into first person now, it makes it look like you're missing an eye.
Yeah, very cool.
I thought that was awesome because it's just like
very subtle touch.
Yep. And there's a nice little moment here where she gives you like the C3 to blow up the Shagohod, and she makes it like a little heart or whatever. And when they're kind of like, this is kind of like they're getting amorous a little bit here. Like they're, you know, she's been kind of flirting with him the whole game. And then like there's kind of there's like a moth floating around.
Yeah.
And then later on, when you're placing the C3 on the Shagohod, he makes it in the shape of a moth. I'm like, what a nice little touch to make it like that. That moment meant something to him. You know what I mean? Like,
for sure.
Like without a word, because later on in several other games, Kojima like goes crazy to show you like, this is genius, and here's why.
Yes.
It's like a, without a word, it's like a, just a really nice moment. But you you sneak back into Grozny Grad, and you wind up fighting Colonel Volgin.
Yeah.
What do you think about this boss fight?
I think the concept of this is more clever than it is fun to play.
Yeah.
Where he does this thing where if you get hit by an electricity attack, your gun becomes unloaded and you have to reload it.
Yeah.
And you have to hit him from certain angles. It's like very video gamey, very early 2000s. And you're also timed, so you're under some duress. I just think it's cooler in concept than it is. It's just not fun. It's a lot of waiting.
Yeah, and I think the cutscenes are really egregious around it. They go on forever.
Oh my god, isn't there a cutscene in the middle of it? Like, could you go into a part two of that fight? I'm pretty sure.
And another thing is that the Sorrow is floating around with the timer.
Oh, yeah. I don't dislike that.
I think that's pretty cool.
It's
And Asala kind of has a change of heart here. Well, he'll see, you know, he'll tip the scales in your favor, throw you the gun.
Yep.
Pretty cool. But not my favorite boss fight by any means, but there are some weird things. Like, you can throw the frog at him and he'll be scared at it. Like,
yeah,
if you
it's
catch
really
a frog,
weird. Yeah.
His big thing is saying Kuwabara, Kuwabara, which is a Japanese phrase used to ward off lightning.
Like, it's very strange.
I don't know anything. Like, I don't get this character.
I don't either.
he's such a cartoon villain, dude.
Yeah, yeah. Like, that's a good word for it.
What I wanted to mention was that there's the scene where Snake is being tortured.
Yeah.
And he's like, you're after the philosopher. Well, there's that. But then he goes on to say, well, you're after the philosopher's legacy, aren't you? And then he tells him where it is. He's like, no matter. It lies safely within my possession in the underground vault at Grozny Grad. But you'll never get it.
Dude, it's
and
like,
then in the scene where you fight the boss fight that you guys were talking about right now.
Yeah.
He like describes it in detail very well. I'll explain it to you before I kill you. It's like why?
It's very cartoony.
We didn't even mention the Philosopher's Legacy and how important this is that it's a microfilm containing the location of a huge sum of money.
Yes, it's money, wealth, yeah.
After World War I, created by the superpowers, you know, the US, Russia, and China. And everyone is kind of trying to get their hands on it. So in addition to all this other shit going on,
I think if we're trying to if we're going to put a pin in this and kind of see where we're at in the story.
Yeah.
I think the most this game is reasonably straightforward, but I think the toughest part to follow is all the double agentry that's going on. Like, who's working with who, and wait, are people. There is kind of a clever moment with Volgin when, I mean, him describing to you where the money is or whatever is stupid.
Yeah.
But you do. I thought he was mentioning money because, oh, is this game stupid? No, we're going to bring up later why the philosopher's whatever makes sense.
Yeah,
but I feel like Kojima does this a lot, where you might think a plot point is silly. Why are people having heart attacks in Metal Gear Solid 1? Oh, wait, it's because of this. Is he bringing up the philosopher's legacy? This is kind of stupid. Oh, wait, no, it isn't.
Right.
They're going to bring it up later.
Sure.
And I think where we're at now is like who's playing on whose side is kind of where we're at.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You have the chaff grenades from the previous game that can help you out in this situation too, which I thought was cool. I didn't even think about that. But he winds up driving the Shagohod. It's kind of a cool, the escape scene.
Yeah, there's a very, very long, very early 2000s vehicle escape
sequence. Yeah, when you're riding on Eva's motorcycle with her. It's kind of odd because if you're playing it non-lethally, there's really no way to get through this without killing people.
Yeah, there's just no way to do this. Yeah.
I thought it was pretty easy.
Yeah, it's easy. I think they really just want to show you it. They don't really want you to play it.
Yeah, but I mean, like, even when you're fighting the Shagohod later, it's pretty easy to just kind of, like, stun lock it.
Very on
the,
rails.
With the, you have infinite ammo with the RPG and stuff.
Yeah.
And he says, who's afraid of a little thunder? And he gets fried.
Yeah.
And we'll check in with Volgin later.
Oh, yeah, we'll check in.
But for all intents and purposes, that's the end of him. I actually don't mind the last little stealth section with Eva when you have to treat her injuries, because she gets stuck on a branch that goes through her. Help her out with that, and kind of it's I was like, oh no, because it's like kind of an escort mission.
Yeah, but it's very brief.
It's very brief. Doesn't really. And then you finally catch up with the boss, who is in this beautiful, beautiful, picturesque set piece, huge field of white flowers. Mm-hmm. And it's just like she gives you this big speech. And I just wanted to talk to you. I mean, now that you're kind of seeing how it all fits together at the mm-hmm. end here, I thought it was really interesting that kind of you're getting into the like sort of Kojima's closing statements here about the whole affair, and how, you know, there's no such thing as an absolute enemy, and like how much of it is due to circumstance and stuff. Mm-hmm. I just like certain, I 90% agree with him in that sense, and how all this came together. But I can't imagine a scenario in which Colonel Volgin and, you know, the Fear and all those guys aren't my enemy.
Like,
maybe they had fucked up lives. I don't know.
I don't know.
They do mention very, I wanted to mention this, is that the Cobra unit stormed Normandy.
Yep.
And I just,
of course they did.
I just want to see it. I just want to see a cutscene where that happened.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom it.
Yeah, but I mean, this fight with the boss is like pretty cool.
It's awesome.
Well, I feel like, do you want to maybe talk a little bit about, kind of bring all the listeners up to the story implications here? Why are you fighting the boss, other than, oh, she was your enemy the whole game, they told you to?
Yeah.
I mean, and she reveals some stuff to you.
She does, and she's pretty much like, you know, revealing that like you've been a pawn pretty much, and why are you doing this? You know, are you loyal to me or your country? Mm-hmm. Do you guys want to weigh in about like sort of like the weight behind, you know, the setup of this boss battle?
Yeah, so from what I understand, boss being killed is set up by the United States government to sort of to keep the cover up in place, right?
Yeah, just wash their hands of
The Russian conflict. The boss had to die, and so now maybe you can clear up like her defecting was also set up.
Yeah,
I believe that was set up to.
This may not be revealed till later, but for all intents and purposes,
and she essentially, it's really weird. It's like a really interesting passing of the torch, where she's like, there can only be one boss. But what she really means is she has to die for the world to survive. And they need to set up a story where Snake kind of defeats evil and saves United States and world, even though it was all a ruse.
Yeah,
but you have to kill her.
Not wholly unlike what happened with Solidus, where it's like, you're really gonna, you don't really have a choice.
This boss I actually thought was kind of cool, where I actually used a combination of sniping and like and claymores.
You can sneak through it. You can't, like, the fake death pill won't work on her.
Yeah,
she'll just say get up.
Yeah, that's really funny.
No, it's very picturesque and cinematic and really cool. And it's kind of interesting too that they, not only that, like everything you said, but you know, she had to kill the Sorrow, and you're kind of having to kill her in the same way.
Yeah.
And, the whole like snake scar and everything. And I can't remember where it is revealed that she and the Sorrow are Ocelot's parents.
Oh, what? I didn't even know
you
that.
You know that?
No.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. Okay. And so it kind of adds this whole other layer to his relationship with Snake, and that they're kind of like the two brothers, I guess. But no, it's really intense. It's kind of tough.
Yeah.
And she's really not like pulling any punches, it doesn't seem like.
No, like she will CQC you and throw your gun away.
Yeah,
and
fuck stuff you like. Up.
What's really interesting though, but Derek, you've brought this up before on the Metal Gear Solid podcast, where I think Kojima does this too much, where why does any boss try to kill you if the point is that you shouldn't die for the story to continue?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's too much of that stuff.
I think for this particular purpose, it was because
it needed to look good.
It would have felt inauthentic if she let you kill her, it would have defeated the purpose.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just kind of like that last like test, like you can do this.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I know you can kill me, etc. And they really, It's a very kind of Paradise Lost moment where it forces you to pull the trigger, you the player.
Quote unquote beat the boss, there's a little bit of like a almost like a interactive cinematic where you have to there's this scene where you're kind of pointing a gun at her and you can't walk away. The game won't end unless you pull the trigger and kill her. It's pretty cool.
And it winds up, it turns all the flowers in the field red.
Yeah.
It's very, very cinematic.
Before like we go on and on forever, should we maybe kind of get to the, you know, end of the game here, you know, the escape sequence, kind of what happens? Because there's like kind of a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there's one last little bit of gameplay where you're on the plane.
Yeah.
And you have one last little showdown with Ocelot, which mm-hmm. I like. And you find it because he's been the one bullet that has been kind of in play the whole time has been hanging on a chain on his mm-hmm. neck. And he loads it into one of the guns. And he does like the shell game, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And like, you know, you have to pick one. And I think it can play out a couple different ways. Like you can get the one that has it. He can get the one that has it. Or you can get it and not shoot him, etc. Mm-hmm. But the cool thing about the whole, you know, it's been in play the whole time, but it's a blank. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you know what? Well, I guess we'll never know.
Right, right, right.
And he takes off. And what I thought was really cool that people don't seem to talk about a lot is that Snake and Eva escape to Alaska, which
yes.
is where the first game takes place, which is awesome. And then you get this, like, dude, the entire like end game sequence is such a gut punch.
Yeah, I think the end game sequence is really interesting.
Yeah.
There is something that I have not loved about some of these Metal Gear Solid games where a lot is revealed to you off camera
yeah.
or that you didn't play it. Kojima is just saying, well, thanks for playing.
By the way.
No, thanks for playing the game, but this actually happened.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Do you want to maybe do like a quick sort of wrap up of what actually happens in this final cinematic? Like, what are all the big reveals?
Yeah, so Snake and Eva bang, and it's revealed. It's a very, I think, cool thing is that she leaves a tape for you. And you see Snake listening to the tape, like having this like out of body experience where he is seeing himself like asleep and Eva is stealing the philosopher's legacy from him
mm-hmm.
and, you know, taking off. And she is essentially, she's revealing that the whole thing with the boss was, you know, it was all a setup. She never defected in the first place. It was all just, you know, to cover up, you know,
the world conflict.
Colonel Volgan launching the nuke in the first place. And it's like, it's basically like you were a complete pawn. You killed one of the closest people, and you'll be effectively your mother, you know, mm-hmm. just as a move. And it's heavy. It's heavy duty.
And she also reveals she's working for the Chinese.
Right.
So she, that's why this is the tough part about this game to follow. There's a lot of double agent stuff going
yeah.
on. Mm-hmm. Like Eva was working for the Chinese and you killing the boss was a setup.
A little foreshadowed earlier on because she's using a Chinese pistol that
yeah.
they draw attention to, which is cool. Mm-hmm. The post credits does reveal that Ocelot was actually working for America.
So Ocelot is also a double agent. Like
right.
a lot of this stuff, it can be a lot to wrap your brain around for sure.
There's a lot of just kind of the consequences of living a lie and, you know, can you really like how much of being a spy is authentic and what does it mean to be loyal to your country? And does it really matter in the end?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think Eva's performance is a little hammy.
Yeah, I mean it is. They overtly try to do the seductress thing, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. But overall, I think, you know, and he winds up, the boss's grave is just unmarked. It says a patriot who saved the world.
Yeah, because she had to die.
And
yeah.
and you know that iconic final shot of him just saluting the grave.
Pretty cool.
It's like,
yeah,
that's cinema, baby.
Yeah, I mean, now we could talk about Metal Gear for so long. Do you guys want to maybe wrap here? Maybe talk about grades. Talk about fine. Let's do very quick final thoughts.
Yep,
Derek, do you want to maybe give us some final thoughts about this end game? And
oh,
if you wanted to give it a grade, what would you give it?
Oh, I have no idea how I grade this game.
Yeah,
I mean, I suppose I'll always love MGS2 more because
yeah.
you know it's an insane meta narrative, which
yeah.
I'll admit I'm a sucker for. I do appreciate how at the beginning of MGS3, there's that little line where Zero tells Snake he's about to embark on the virtuous mission. And then
yeah.
Snake replies, virtual mission? No, a virtuous mission. Which I think it was Kojima's way of telling the audience, guys, don't worry. It's real this time. It's not a simulation.
Yeah.
Which I suppose was also a little nod to... did you say nerd? Not nerd.
Yeah.
Node.
Yeah.
So I did sort of appreciate how it was. I mean, in its own right, I'm glad it's sort of like a return to form after the insanity that was MGS2. But again, like I mentioned this in the last podcast as well, where like it is pretty miraculous how like exactly according to plan, how precisely according to plan everybody's plans played out.
Yeah, sure.
Like it's pretty miraculous.
Everyone's double agent tree works, considering the
very complex progression of events.
Yeah.
How like everything the boss and Eva like planned on having happened.
And Ocelot, because he's a double agent too, apparently.
Right. That is true.
Yeah. Do you have a grade for us?
Oh geez.
Hard to say.
I'll give it an A-.
Oh wow, okay, yeah. Generous. Yeah. I think this is a tough one where it's like I said in the first 5 seconds, like Beppy and I had very reverse experiences from Silent Hill 2 and Metal Gear Solid 3, where like I didn't really like playing this game, but I liked the story of this game.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this game is like, for me, it's like a B, where I'm like, I didn't really like playing it, but I liked the story and how it wraps up. And I really liked all the story beats the entire time. And there's a... It's just unfortunate that I missed a lot of cool stuff. I just had like an unfortunate run, mm-hmm. gameplay wise. It's like a B for me. I don't know. What do you think? Like, I don't know if you've ever revealed your favorite Metal Gear, but go ahead.
I think the previous I had 8 for Metal Gear 1, Metal Gear Solid 1, 2 I had a 10. I'd give this one a 9.
Okay, yeah.
I think it's just a slight cut down. Like I said, I agree with you on all of the gameplay merits. It's very it hasn't aged super well in that, mm-hmm. respect. I don't really like crawling around in the grass where you can't really see what's going on.
Yeah.
They're a lot slower. And that's it's harder to swallow that when I would totally be fine with slower gameplay if the controls were a little tighter.
I think
in terms of what it accomplished for story and characters and themes in 2004, I think a 9 is fair.
Yeah. I think that's going to do it for Metal Gear Solid 3. And next time we will talk about Metal Gear Solid 4.
Guns of the Patriots.
Yeah, there's a lot to discuss with that one too. So
much more to say about this one.
Yeah, so thank you guys for sticking with us through this retrospective, and we will see you next time. Thanks.